Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This podcast of NPR's On Point with Tom Ashbrook is a production of WBUR Boston.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Sharp-edged Washington columnist Maureen Dowd puts the knife in often and deep from her place on the op-ed page of the New York Times. She skewered Bill Clinton and won a Pulitzer Prize in the year of Monica Lewinsky woes. She has savaged the Bush White House with withering portraits of bunker-bound Dark Daddy Dick Cheney and of a hapless, hopeless George W. Bush. She went after her own controversial colleague, Times reporter Judith Miller, who left the paper days later in a cloud. This fall, the only woman on the Times op-ed page came out with a new book, saying feminism itself was a blip and a bust. That has raised a storm worthy of Dowd. Up next on Point, New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd on Bush and men, war and women. Joining me now from New York is Maureen Dowd, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times and author of the new book, Are Men Necessary? When Sexes Collide. Maureen Dowd, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. That was quite an introduction.
I don't know how much of it you got. It sounds like you were sliding into home plate there, out of the taxi, up the stairs, and down to the mic. We're glad we got you. You're no stranger to controversy. You provoke it night and day, mostly mornings, over coffee, over the paper. But what about all the pushback on this? It's been pretty stern and very stern from women who said, come on, Maureen Dowd. You think we've won nothing in these 40 years? Look at the athletic field. Look where we are in business. Look where we are in journalism. Look at the progress we've made. Don't write it off.
Yeah, no, I think there's been a lot of misconstruing of what the book is about. They've taken a few graphs here and there and made assumptions. And a lot of the people talking about it haven't read it. I wrote it specifically to be breezy and fun and be an antidote to all the war and torture and smearing spies and depressing things I've been writing about for the last 5 years. So, and it's meant to ask questions and start cool, sexy conversations between men and women. It was not meant to, you know, start angry rants between women, which it has. But I think that it is not a pessimistic book at all. I don't think things are dire for strong, successful women at all. I think that they're doing fine. I just think it's a little trickier than we thought it would be at the dawn of the sexual revolution.
Well, help us out. Maybe we'll just start with the visuals. I mean, you've got this film noir kind of, I don't know, 40s, 50s cover with the very shapely gal in the red dress and a kind of a Maureen Dowd tint of red hair, I'd have to say here. Looking strong and sexy, and the men sort of looking at her from all sides of the subway car, I guess is New York, at the bombshell. What's the message? Who's the woman in the visual here? Or who's the woman that you're writing to, for, about, Maureen Dowd?
Well, I was afraid that men, you know, I wanted to have this very Jane Austen-esque Pride and Prejudice sort of spark and spur and snap and crackle attitude to the cover in the book so that it would start these very sexy conversations between men and women about where we stand now. And so I wanted the title to be fun and playful and mischievous. And just to make sure that men didn't misunderstand it, I wanted a film noir vixen on the cover. And there's this fantastic artist named Owen Smith who writes for The New Yorker. And he does this woman in every New Yorker fiction issue. And in each fiction issue, she is in a different iconic film noir pose. Like in one at Christmas, she was shooting Santa Claus as he came down the chimney. And then it turned out to be her husband or something. And now she's in a different illustration that Owen Smith has done in Men's Journal, I think, or one of the men's magazines. And she's at a bar. So she's moved from the subway to a bar now.
If this is the Maureen Dowd woman that you're writing about, you know, very shapely, vixen with a book in her hand and her hind end in a guy's face.
No, I'm saying it isn't. Yeah, no, yeah, Tom, yeah, yeah. It isn't me. It isn't anything to do with me. But I just happen to love that artist because I have film noir posters in my house.
And yet that
is his creation that he's been using for years in The New Yorker.
But it did seem to speak to the kind of woman you're writing about who's strong, sexy,
you're mischaracterizing.
Right,
the book is not, that's like a few paragraphs in the book about you know, that some strong women pay too much attention to their careers and then wake up and, you know, complain that they don't have a personal life. But that is not me. I have always focused on my personal life first, and my career has only enhanced my personal life. So there's been a lot of buzz about the book. And somebody at the New York Observer, a reporter, called me and said, can you talk about the talk about the book? And I said, no, I'm too busy talking about the book. So I think that everyone should read it because it is really fun. And it is, you know, not about strong women having problems. And it's about a lot of different things, a lot of different fun topics. And it's 30 years of what I've covered about men and women at play, at work, in Hollywood, and in politics.
Well, give us the guts of it then, or the headline, as you would put it, Maureen Dowd. What's happened with women in these 40 years that you say the backlash has gone on against feminism? We'll talk about men, but place women for us first. What's the Maureen Dowd take on where they've come?
Okay, it has a lot of different elements that interlock but are separate. The one about feminism is, a few years ago, I began noticing that women used to talk about plays and politics and novels, and now they were talking more about skin and dermatologists. So I began interviewing dermatologists and entered this amazing sort of Philip K. Dick world of women freezing their faces with Botox and dermatologists storing the fat of celebrities so that they can take the fat from their derrieres and put it in their face, and women obsessing so much that they're worried that if they have a wrinkle on their earlobe, they want it taken off. And as Tina Alster, a Washington dermatologist, put it, I said, how do you tell your patients when they've gone too far? And she said, when their mouth is moving at a different rate than the rest of their face because they have so much collagen in it and they look like an Italian dub movie, they've gone too far.
So what's that piece about? Is that, I mean, people have always fought aging and mortality. Is there something else going on?
Well, that made me realize that feminism had been trumped by narcissism, because the feminists in, you know, part of the early feminism was that we wouldn't be so focused on looks, that there would be a more capacious attitude toward looks. And, you know, they wanted to protect us from being sex objects. And when Gloria Steinem said all women are bunnies, that was a call to arms, not, you know, a recommendation. And now suddenly we have a lot of women in the country trying to look like Barbies and bunnies, which were two of the things feminists tried to get rid of. And even Cosmo has a story, are we turning into a nation of plastic dolls? And you know you're in trouble when Cosmo thinks the plastic surgery has gone too far.
The Bible of plastic dolls. And yet, you know, it's partly being received the way it is because Maureen Dowd, you, never embraced that Birkenstock way. You were always kind of famously more enamored of the old glam style of being feminine, and unapologetically so.
Well, I felt in the early days of feminism, I didn't really feel that welcome because I liked, you know, being womanly. I didn't want to imitate men. I mean, I did because that's what we had to do. I got the little navy blue suits and the floppy ties and tried to be a little mini me of men, which we were supposed to be. But I never thought that that was going to work. And in fact, it didn't. Even Gloria Steinem herself would admit that the movement was too militant and hostile toward the idea of women and babies and families and things that women like, shopping and, you know, womanly things. And they expected us to emulate men in every way. And now, you know, that was excessive, and now it's swung to another excessive place where a lot of young women are trying to discover their inner slut and, you know, wearing Playboy T-shirts all the time and Abercrombie and Fitch T-shirts for teens that say across the chest, if I've got these, why do I need brains?
You've got all this Maureen Dowd coloring. Take us to the bottom. At bottom, do you think women can be or have become equal to men in American society? Or is it just impossible? Are you saying it's impossible to balance all that accomplishment and womanliness at the same time?
Well, my mom had a great line in a letter to me once a long time ago that I quote in the book, where she said that she sent me for my 31st birthday a little extra, you know, bank book with a little extra money she'd saved for my sister and me, which was little because she's on a police widow's pension. Yeah. And she wrote me the loveliest letter and said, women will never be equal to men, even if they stand on top of the Empire Building and shout that they're equal to men, they never will be as long as they don't have the same anatomy. Men can always eat their cake in unlimited bakeries. And I just love the feminist sentiment behind that. But the I think that women are on the right course now. We were on the wrong course when we were trying to imitate men. We're on the right course, but it's very complicated. Young women now think that baby boomer women were in too much of a grind. Life was not fun for them by trying to do everything, you know, equal and have everything exactly equal. And so their attitude is either more realistic or more retro, depending how you look at it.
Maureen Dowd, we need to get the male side of this equation in here as well, and we might as well just jump off a recent column. You say on December 5th, you wrote, "I've said it before, and I'll say it again: men are simply not biologically suited to hold higher office. The Bush administration has proved that once and for all." What's the incapacitation here?
Well, that's a chapter in the book. It's social satire. It's meant in a funny way. I just try and flip around all the stereotypes and language that were always used about women through the centuries. Through the centuries, they said that women could not hold higher office because of their biology,
right?
That they could not have reasonable and rational discourse, and they would have these hormonal rages. So I flip it around, and I say women may have lunar tides once a month, but Dick Cheney has hormonal rages every day. And look at Rummy's J-Lo diva fits, and even this guy Duke Cunningham, you know, who had all the bribes this week from defense contractors.
The Rolls Royce, the yacht, all
yeah,
the rest.
He's been on a Louis Philippe commode, antique commodes, and he was sobbing. And you never see Hillary and Condi crying. They don't throw like girls.
So you've got your edgy humor on it, and we'll talk about Hillary and Condi. But what about the kernel of truth that makes this all ring? Are you saying, observing, that something has happened to men in the era of feminism?
Well, I just think that, you know, for years, I still am dubious when people say there can be a woman president in 2008 because we don't even have a permanent female anchor for the nightly news, a solo one yet. And we, you know, we have one female columnist at the Times out of 8 or 9, if you count the ombudsman. Mm. And so I think that we would have one Supreme Court justice. I think we thought we'd be further along now. And there are lots of reasons we aren't. But I just think that chapter is just a funny chapter. It's kind of reversing all the traditional things that they thought would hurt women as far as holding higher office and saying, you know, Poppy Bush and George Voinovich are always crying. And when Katrina hit, Michael Brown, the Brownie, the director of Katrina, wrote all these unbelievable emails to his staff saying, "Look at the shirt I'm wearing. It's from Nordstrom. I'm a fashion god." I mean, people are literally dying on screen for the whole country to see, and he is obsessing on his wardrobe.
"Check out my FEMA wardrobe," yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So is there cause and effect here? I mean, you're saying men have been kind of, I don't know, wimpified somehow. I think the modern society's fault?
Definitely has been feminized. And, you know, you see, when I first started, if you even talked about shopping at the office as a woman, that was frowned upon. And, you know, there were just a lot of strict things where you had to act like a man and not mention your personal life in the code of things. And now you see men talking about shopping in the office and talking about, you know, trying to take family leave. And I do think that the workplace has been feminized a lot, and that's a good thing.
But at the bottom, you've got women all confused about what they're supposed to be, men feminized and kind of confused as well. I mean, we know it's sort of playing with all the archetypes here, but how do you really see it? Do you see dysfunctional gender roles in this country now?
Well, you mentioned the model a couple times, but I say the model is a good thing. The only thing I think was wrong was when we were trying to be men, because we're not men. And to the extent we can reshape the world for our needs and desires as women, that will work much better. And, you know, there's one chapter about the Y chromosome, which is kind of fading and genetic terms.
Realistically there.
Evolutionary
biology. Men's special
biologist.
Gift is less important. You say the Japanese have come up with, they can, what, take two female mice and get a mouse offspring and maybe men will be unnecessary.
That lesbians could, you know, have a child without a man, yeah. Well, there are a lot of advances in that. And, you know, it's just funny to look at it from a biological point of view, too, because in biology, the X married down and the Y married up, because the Y is wilting and shrinking and may go out of business in 100,000 years, and the X is showing more gene expression. So in a very short period of time, Oprah is going to be running the whole planet men. Norman Mailer has this terror theory that they're only going to be – that women will run the planet and keep 100 sperm slaves and milk them every day. But I think he's really just terrified that he won't be one of them.
Maureen Dowd writing about men in Western societies adapting, becoming more feminized, turning into over-therapized, over-sharing, over-emoting emo boys. Let's speak to your latest column coming off of your book tour time, The Autumn of the Patriarchy. And you start off with Dick Cheney back in the bunker, the one that used to be called the West Wing of the White House, muttering and sputtering. And you conclude with him thinking to himself, Poppy isn't getting Junior back, Vice vowed, muttering, he's my son, it's my war, it's my country. What's the picture of Dick Cheney that you're channeling here, Maureen?
Well, in the same way that the Cinderella myth is the most important archetypal myth for women, the what you would call the Star Wars myth, which they drew from the Joseph Campbell hero myth, is the most important for men. It is about the father-son story. That is the most important thing. And in, you know, this White House replicates it in this really fascinating way because it's the light father, which is his own father, and the dark father, Dick Cheney, who was put in charge of Junior to take care of him because he didn't know anything about foreign policy and instead sort of hijacked his presidency and, you know, ran away with it. And now President Bush is, you know, very depressed. He's kind of stuck in the Middle East. He's angry at everyone around him, and they are describing the West Wing as a bunker. And Tom DeFrank in the New York Daily News had this hilarious lead on a story the other day where he said, embattled White House aides fear that the president may actually personally have to take the reins of his presidency.
Imagine that. Watch out.
Which I loved. But I love exploring, you know, it was such a hyper-masculine White House at the beginning, you know, bullying and swaggering and kicking around the world. And now Bush seems like a little boy surrounded by his nannies and governesses. He's got Condi Rice to take care of him on foreign policy and Karen Hughes on politics and Harriet Myers on his legal needs, and it's like his team of Vestal virgins doting on him. And Harriet Myers is so awestruck by him and telling him how brilliant he is that he mistook that for qualifications for the Supreme Court.
But the polls are lousy. Do you see, in the Maureen Dowd view of the world, do you see him unbuckling from what you call the dark daddy, Vice President Dick Cheney, or not? Is he buckled in permanently?
I don't know. I've heard different things that he's mad at Cheney about the whole Scooter Libby, Valerie Plame thing, but he doesn't seem to be distancing himself. The speech yesterday was not, it was completely in Bush world. It was a total denial of reality. And until they admit what they did wrong and try and change the plan, you know, our soldiers are in a bad situation. And, you know, they keep saying that people who question the war are unpatriotic. Well, the unpatriotic thing was to take all the intelligence studies that warned that there would be a civil war and insurgency and bury them and just do what they wanted without giving the soldiers the proper numbers, the proper armor, and the proper information that they needed to fight a war that was predicted by our intelligence services.
Look ahead with us. We've just got a minute and a half here. This administration, it's got its war, it's got its poll numbers, it's got the cast of characters that you write about. So I'm tempted to say cuttingly, but I won't this time. Where do you see this circus heading?
I'm very sad. That's part of the reason I wanted to do this book and have some fun, because the Iraq War is a very sad situation to me. I feel terrible for our kids there, and they just didn't know what they were getting into. And the president can't get them out until he acknowledges reality and makes a new plan. And it's a very tough time for America. And we've changed. You know, the irony of it is they thought they would have socially engineered the Middle East and change the whole attitude in the Middle East with this utopian, woolly-headed neocon plan of theirs. But they've ended up changing our image of ourselves as Americans. Are we people who torture? Do we have CIA black holes places? Are we incompetent? You know, are we bullies? I mean, Americans are in a, you know, crisis of confidence now.
Maureen Dowd putting on her red dress and shaking that red mane to cheer herself up a little bit.
I have on black,
all
Tom.
Right, all right, today. But tonight, who knows? Maureen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom.
Maureen Dowd joining us from New York. Her new book is Are Men Necessary When Sexes Collide? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.